Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And it is a very busy, active day in the Dunbar Lumber text line. So get your submissions in. We got an open segment after we speak with Kevin Woodley here, so we'll try to get into them in that segment. Do we have Woodley on the line? No, not yet. We will get Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine on momentarily, because it's maybe hasn't been a front burner issue for this team, but obviously the performance of Thatcher Demko since he's come back has left a lot to be desired for the Canucks. And with his contract situation, with Kevin Lankinen's contract situation, all of it, the situation in the crease is a pretty big deal, a pretty significant one for the Canucks to work through here, in addition to everything else that they have on the go, everything else they're trying to work through, trying to figure out right now. So looking forward, as always, to get Woodley's thoughts on Thatcher Demko, on Kevin Lankinen, and the state of this team generally. And now joining us, he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. He is Kevin Woodley. Woodley, how's it going?
I'm going to actually have to stop by and see my friends at White Rock Hyundai just because they have such a chipper and cheerful, welcoming gourmet coffee. They even got one of those like bubbly water machines that will add flavor to it while you're waiting. And I kind of feel like I need that type of pick me up. So I'm maybe going to have to add that to my schedule today.
You're saying you're lifting yourself
out of the doldrums of last night.
The workplace you're spending a lot of time in doesn't necessarily have those vibes, Woodley.
They're very much the opposite vibes. Although, as the vibes get worse locally, I find myself spending less time in that workplace, frankly.
Yeah, fair enough. So there's a lot to get into here, and we will. I don't want to do all of it on goaltending, but as I was just saying, I know the play and the situation with Thatcher Demko is getting a lot of attention right now. Obviously, he's said it's not up to his standards. He feels like he's lost touch with his game a little bit. Another tough performance just in terms of the raw statistics last night. How concerned should Canucks fans be about what they're seeing from Thatcher Demko recently?
Well, in the short term, he'll be the first to tell you it's concerning, right? Like last night was a game where it wasn't all on him. They gave up close to 5 expected goals in that game, 14 high danger chances. There were far too many guys, as Talk had said, that frankly didn't piss a drop in that one. And that's a problem. But you're supposed to be the guy that bails it out. And I think like the one thing that we saw out of Lankinen in early this season that was helping them, sort of keep their heads above water, although for the most part against lesser opponents, the strength of schedule was pointed out by many at the time. But the high danger chances early in games, right? Like how many times did we have the conversation about, bailing them out on tough chances and so many tough chances early? And that just hasn't happened for Thatcher. At the end of the day, if I filter for, let's say, 250 minimum chances, just to sort of weed out the guys who have just had a cup of coffee this year, there's 63 goalies that have had that many chances this year. Out of those 63, Thatcher Demko's adjusted save percentage ranked 62nd. The only guy worse is Philip Grubauer. So that's obviously not the company you want to be keeping. You don't want to be down there with Grubauer and Alexander Georgiev at this point of the season. So that's the short term. There's no point in, trying to put lipstick on that pig. But long term, like I'm at the end of the day, I look more at what happened with Jeremy Swayman and look at how long it's taken him. And if you watch him of late, he's back to being, maybe not every night because they have defensive problems there as well, but he's giving you those performances like last weekend in Florida where he single-handedly won them the game. He's giving them those performances more regularly a couple of months into the season, and all that Jeremy missed was training camp and preseason. When you think about all the time that Thatcher has missed, when you think about all the work that he puts in starting August 1st, typically with the goalie coach, and then to take all that away plus the preseason, it's like trying to catch a moving train. And I just think, myself included, I was guilty of perhaps underestimating how hard this would be. I think in part because he thinks the game so well. in part because I always sort of counted on the details of his game being there. And we've seen some of those slip as well. Like, you know, like how many dead angle goals have we seen in the, you know, sort of sharp angle around the net, you know, even in the last week? I would argue more than we've seen in the last couple of years combined. And I still think a lot of that is reads, and he's not comfortable with those reads. And so, but there are elements of execution and details that I think have slipped a little bit too. And sort of, you know, frankly, that's where your floor comes. That's your baseline. And right now the floor is lower than I would expect for him. I think most importantly than he would expect for himself. And yet I'm still trying to give him a little grace here because I can't imagine how hard this has been, given all the expectations that surround him, to have missed this much time and to have the expectations that you'll just come back in and to not be able to do it. It's got to be a grind mentally.
Kevin, the thing that concerns me right now is what I'm reminded of watching Demko right now, form-wise, is the start of that 22-23 campaign, where Boudreau would later say that, you know, he was sort of rushed back. I'm not saying he was rushed back in this instance, but it was a moment where, you know, perhaps Demko physically wasn't at the level that he's usually been when he's been one of the top puck stoppers in hockey. You know, the dead angle chances that he's permitting, some of the stuff we're seeing in terms of vulnerability on distance shots, both wristers, but also on, blasts from the point, layered traffic stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
that's uncharacteristic.
I mean, even without, he's got four clear-sighted low danger goals already this year. He had two all of last season.
Right. So do you see any, I suppose, like connection to what we're seeing now to that, you know, 6 weeks of uncharacteristically poor play that Demko put together at sort of the start of that last Boudreau season?
Yeah, see, that was a little tough for me because I thought that the defending at the start of that season was so woefully inadequate.
Yes, you're
right. There were also games where he stood on his bloody head and the numbers still didn't add up, right? Like, remember that Philly game where they lost 2-0 and, you know, like he was like something like five goals saved above.
No, that was the Tocket season. You're mixing it up.
Okay, so that was last year. That was before he got hurt. Are you talking about the year he got hurt?
I'm talking about the 22-23 season. So he got hurt at the end of that Boudreau bump season. Came back,
yeah. So
and then he gets hurt.
Boudreau and then they fired Boudreau and brought in.
You remember it as the Delia Martin season, yeah? The season that Boudreau gets fired. Start of that season.
I thought the beginning of that season, actually, I didn't think it was him as much as it was just the tire fire going on around him. But to your point, it's really hard to tell, Thomas. And, I don't know. I haven't been able to have that conversation. How much of this is physical? How much? I lean more towards rust. Like, I thought there was a point in that game last night. I was watching it. It wasn't there early, where early in the second period, all of a sudden, like, it looked like something clicked. Like, all of a sudden, he was faster post to post. He was leading with eyes. Like, that's one of the biggest things habit-wise that I see is, you know, he's leading with his body rather than leading with vision. And as soon as you do that, you reach rather than staying over top of your limbs and collect it. And that's when pucks start going through you from some of those dead angles. Like, so much of what they do in terms of the coaching and the habits is vision first, you know, fast side eyes, fast back to front eyes, all those things. And I see him at time going body first rather than vision first, reaching first. And that, you know, I think there are ties to some of the holes that have been exploited as part of that in and around the net play. And then all of a sudden, midway through the second period, it looked like, and to me, when they do that, there's a pace to his game that I've said since training camp, like I haven't seen that same pace. And I honestly can't tell you how much of that is physical, how much of that is reads. Because if you don't trust or feel good about what's going on in front of you, and I'm not blaming defense. I mean, in terms of just comfortable with where you expect the play to be based on having played a bunch of games and feeling good and trusting everything around you and in front of you and your anticipation based off that, those things look the same. So I can't tell you how much of it is just the rust of the reads, how much of it is some of the little habits like visual leads into movement, how much of it is some of the, like, is the amount they're practicing some of those pace things? Because as I've said before, the movement is almost violent when he's on top of his game. And there were people that said, yeah, and that's part of the problem. So how much of it is changing those habits And how much of it is just the time, and how much of it is the body. So there's a lot. I guess what I'm saying is there's so many factors that come into it when you miss this much time, when you lose the voice who has been a part of building your career to this level, with Ian Clark's decision not to be goalie coach and the team's decision not to keep him around in another capacity. When you have that much time up, when the defensive environment craters in front of you, like, there is so much that has changed, and it's really hard to pinpoint exactly what it is that's leading to what we can all see is just not the same sharpness, crispness, pace, or level of detail and execution that we're used to seeing from this goaltender. But I will say, like, we know his expectations are high, and you know he's going to do the work to get back there. I think long-term it'll be fine, but this team isn't thinking long-term right now. They're just trying to get out of week by week.
Woodley, beyond the goaltending situation, that game last night, and I mean, I've heard some people refer to it as rock bottom. I'm pretty hesitant about that because you never know, right? There could always be another worse one around the corner. But since, really since the reported almost consummated JT Miller trade, it does feel like this team is just waiting for something to happen. Obviously hasn't happened yet. And I've been very much on team, look, I don't care that much about the return. I want to see them move on from this mess they're in right now. I get why that's not always popular. I mean, what's your take on the situation? Do they need to just kind of start dismantling this core, or should they be a little bit more patient with things?
Oh, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know what the offers look like, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand. I guess at the end of the day, too, I understand both points to it. Like, I understand both sides to it. Like, man, if you think Pettersson's under pressure and feeling it right now, they move JT Miller for pennies on the dollar, don't improve the team in the process, which it looks and sounds like by all the reporting it's going to be very hard to do. You know, and again, like, improve the team relative to how they're performing with him right now as opposed to relative to, you know, what we know he's capable of and has shown actually at times of late. Like, we're a week removed from the win over Edmonton and 2 weeks removed you know, from the game in Toronto, not that far removed from, you know, 4 points in Montreal. So it's like that lingering there and people remembering how good that can be. The fact you're not seeing it consistently. I see both sides to this. I hate to like I'm stretching for an upcoming game this afternoon as we talk. And all of a sudden, like, I'm having pain and I realize it's not the stretching. It's me sitting on the fence so hard right now on this one. So I just don't know. I don't know. At the end of the day, though, I do lean a little bit towards what you're saying. It just feels so bad. And it has. Thomas has been in that room. Like, it hasn't felt great all year. And that's the thing. Like, they got away with a lot of it. And they kept pointing to, you know, when we get healthy, when we get healthy. Well, they were meanwhile treading water against lesser teams. Like, I don't think not playing for each other and not competing consistently is new to the last week. It's just hit another level of low at a time when the competition is much higher. Like, there have been a lot of games this year. Like, they could have built a bigger cushion against the lesser teams earlier in the year, but they weren't consistent with their efforts. There were too many nights where they didn't work, you know, whether it's where you want to say work for the fans or work for each other is, I think, the problem we're at now. And if there's no way to change that short of that move, then yeah, maybe you have to make it at a loss. Just, you know, I hesitate, and I've heard it many times, you know, the idea that it's addition by subtraction. Like, that's hard to do given the quality of JT Miller when he's at his best. But if you're just never getting him at his best again here, then maybe you do.
Woodley,
man, that hurts to sit on the fence that hard, guys. Like,
Sorry, Drance was doing it yesterday too. Woodley, you got company up there.
It's a complicated one.
As much as I've been pushing one way, it is obvious. It's an incredibly complicated, difficult situation they find themselves in.
That's why they in part put themselves in this situation.
Yes,
and
for sure.
That's why they make the big bucks, and you and I are getting radio salary. So I'm just happy. You know, like, I was
you get paid
into it. Yeah, Thomas, don't tell anyone. I was a little too deep into a pigeon stretch there, and I was worried I'd done something. And then I realized, okay, it's okay. It's just a fence.
The thing is there's no right choice. Okay, there are only bad choices. right? So it's is the less bad choice? I think when you're comparing bad choices, there's not a right one anyway. So it's hard. You're not even fence sitting. You're just navigating between bad choices. And I think one of the reasons here is the Hughes contract dynamic means you know, there's no starting a rebuild now, right? Like there's no restarting of the retool either. Like this team has to be good next year. That's it. Like that's it. This experiment demands it. And so I'm with you, man. I think it's not that you're sitting on the fence. It's that you hate both options.
That's a great way of putting it. And I'll add to the complexity of that. Like Hughes isn't the only one who's got a ticking number on that contract. The guy we spent a lot of time talking about, who I expressed a lot of faith in getting back to, you know, that finishing second in Vezina Trophy, would argue he wins it if he doesn't get hurt last year. Like Demko's got one more year too. And as much as I am definitely not an insider and definitely not reporting things, you know, the goalie coaching community reaches out and I'm starting to hear the same things, right? Like his name is definitely out there. And whether it's legitimate or not, it sounds like has been part of some of these conversations, perhaps particularly in Carolina. So it feels like this may all just be fishing on both sides. There may be nothing to it, but it feels like there may be at least consideration of much bigger blowing up of this core than just JT Miller.
And that's pretty understandable, to be honest, at this point, right? I mean, as much as JT Miller's in the spotlight because we heard about the trade, and it seems now like maybe he's okay with moving on as well. So it's understandable that we're focusing on it. But as much as we get back to like there's no good options here, as much as you say they have to be good next year because of Quinn Hughes, I agree with that. I also can't really think of untouchables beyond Quinn Hughes on this team. So if they want to explore something bigger, like, okay, I guess that makes sense too. It feels like a situation where all options should pretty much be on the table.
Yeah, and I mean, they found Lankinen. Obviously, it's going to cost a lot more if you decide to go that way to keep him. But they're about to play a Washington Capitals team that is near the top of the entire NHL with all of, what, $2.5 million committed to its goaltending? Now, it won't stay that way. Charlie Lindgren's a UFA. I think Logan Thompson is an RFA. Thompson, by the way, is his season is ridiculous right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is well clear of Connor Hellebuck in goals saved above expected, and his adjusted save percentage is in the range of the year people were shouting that Shesterkin should also get the Hart Trophy. So, you know, there are two trains of thought around the league on goaltending. One is when you have a guy like Thatcher Demko, who's capable of such incredible things, you never let him go. And the other is we can find guys. And you can't help but wonder, given some of the whisperings you've heard around this team, around this group's thoughts on goaltending this year, whether they might not think they can't be one of the latter if they decide to go away from the former.
With Thompson, Woodley, you know, as you know, I know nothing about goaltending, but the one thing I know to look for is the goalie who never actually has to make a tough save because their position's so sound. Or positioning is so sound. When I watch Logan Thompson right now, that's the vibe I'm getting. Is that fair? Are my eyes on to anything here?
Well, I'm hoping to have a conversation with him and the staff. As a matter of fact, I will connect with the staff this afternoon and maybe even him. But as they're here this weekend, and they're here for a while, actually, guys, so through Monday, that wouldn't have been the case in Vegas. There is very much a freelance to Logan, or was when he was there. I haven't deep dived it yet, Thomas. Like, I haven't spent hours looking at footage, but in my cursory glances, it sure feels like he's got a more conservative initial depth or initial positioning, and his, you know, outside of rush chances, right? I mean, just the in and around the crease, and is just putting himself in a better spot more consistently. That's the thing, though. Like, his numbers were never bad in Vegas. Like, he was always above expected. You know, there were questions at times about availability. There were questions about wanting a bigger role when he was healthy and then being able to play it at times when he wasn't healthy. There was a lot of sort of noise around Vegas. But his numbers were never bad. They weren't this good. They weren't, you know, give Igor Shesterkin the Hart Trophy good. And again, like, it's absurd how good they are right now. Tops in the league by a long stretch. But that, to me, says there has been maybe a bit of a tactical adjustment. But a big part of, as the game shifts and shooters know what to expect from goalies, there is a freelance element to Logan's game where he'll do some things that don't look the same as other goalies. And some that might make some goalie coaches itch. But I don't think it's a coincidence that he's having this success in Washington under Scott Murray, the goaltending coach, who was also part of the staff when they first invited him from Brock University to join South Carolina in the ECHL. So there's a certain element of, hey, let's rein in some things. I think you're seeing that, Thomas. Never out of position, but they're not trying to break him or change him completely. And he's obviously got real upside from a skill standpoint. They don't want to take that away as part of the, you know, I would say raise the floor process that comes with more consistent positioning. Let's put you in a spot to get hit more often, but not take away all the natural skills that give you such a high ceiling. So let's raise the floor without taking away the high ceiling in fantasy football terms. Quite often, and I think there's a little bit of this with Jari, they tried to raise his floor and may have cost him his ceiling in the process by trying to put too much technique into his game. Thompson seems to have a really nice balance going right now, and I think I'm guessing that the goalie coaching staff there and their knowledge of him as a person, personality, and player is playing a role in this success.
Woodley, just before we let you go here, I wanted to ask you about Rick Tocchet as well. And of course, when a team struggles, the criticism of the head coach is going to increase. That's certainly been the case here in Vancouver this year, at least from our listeners. And a lot of it focuses on, you know, the so-called offensive system from Rick Tocchet, the struggles to generate shots, scoring chances, goals, all of it. How much are you buying that responsibility for that and those struggles rests at the feet of Rick Tocchet?
I mean, when it gets like this, you would be naive to think that it's not a part of it, right? Like, it would be naive to ignore it. It would be probably naive to think they're ignoring it completely.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly don't put as much as others seem to do. You know, the numbers have fallen off a cliff. Like, they weren't bad for the first third of the season in terms of the expected offensive numbers. And they were right around where they were, which sort of top half of the league in terms of scoring. Like, they weren't out performing what we had at ClearSight Analytics for their expected. But they have really cratered since then. So I'm kind of of two minds here. You know, it's not really his job to get them to work hard, but it sort of is his job to motivate them. And so how much of what we're seeing right now is a group that's, you know, last night was just not enough effort, right? Like, from the group. And we've said it, not playing for each other and all those things. So if you're pinning that on him, I don't know how much. I will say that I do think the style he wants them to play is hard. It requires a lot of hard work. And so my leaning is, well, I think it's fair to expect millionaire athletes to work hard and to buy into that style and to try as hard as they can. And we haven't seen that consistently on a night-to-night basis. So is this system too hard for them to do the work on a nightly basis? Then you have to look at it. Does it limit the offense a little bit? Yes, but it had success last year. And if, for as bad as it's gotten, and they're giving up way more off the rush this year than they used to, they're still overall 5-on-5 expected goals against top five. And so we can get into whether they're stifled offensively or whether they're not willing to work hard enough within the system to generate the offense it used to generate. But as far as what typically leads to playoff success, should they actually get there, it's the defensive side of the rink. And overall, it's still fine, but they have to cut down on the rush stuff. That's such a primary indicator. And they've gone to 20th in the league, 5-on-5, high danger against off the rush. That's not going to get it done. PK's down to 26 in terms of expected goals. And hey, some of this goes on Rick Tocchet, sure. But I also have questions about decisions that were made around his staff this summer. It sure felt from the outside like some of those were financially based for an organization that had one taste of success and no problem raising ticket prices. It felt like they cheaped out in other areas. And so this isn't a criticism of the guys that were brought in to replace him. But let's be honest, there's a distinct lack of experience compared to what they had helping him behind the bench in the past.
Yeah, and the American League level too. right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, what's the power play? What's Jeremy Calton running in the NHL?
Third best power play. Yep.
Yeah. Right?
So even if you were just promoting him, right, as opposed to losing him entirely, I think that's a really good point you just made there on
coaching assets. I was willing. Management got the benefit of the doubt. They missed rarely up to this summer, and they've had a couple of misses on player personnel that they've copped to. Some they've copped to, some they just can't move on from.
Darnay and Heinen.
Like, it happens.
Yeah.
100%. And it happens. But these moves, and listen, this ownership has spent to the cap and had no problem spending on a robust management staff and on players, and they deserve credit for that. And on bringing a farm team to the American Hockey League so that Ryan Johnson can develop players, and they deserve massive credit for all of that. But it felt like around the margins, some of these decisions, you know, were potentially made with a bottom line in mind. At least it felt that way. And I don't think you can overlook the impact. Like, you know, Mike Yeo.
Yep.
Mike Yeo has a lot of experience in the National Hockey League.
Woodley, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. We kept you a little long, so we'll let you finish those pigeon stretches and get ready for the game.
Yeah, just make sure to stretch your non-cap spending, bruh.
You lost me on that one, Thomas. goalie brain here. I really need to go see my friends at White Rock Hyundai and have a coffee.
Thank you, Woodley.
Take care, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George and White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
I hope he's stretching those hammies with the way that he's making sure to get four plugs in a Radiohead.
He knows where his bread is buttered.
Hey, if the Canucks hustled like that, they might have been in that game last night.
By the way, anyway, we got to go to break here, but Dom's not here, so I'm flexing my ability to go long without being played off. The thing, like, well, Tocket's system is so hard. Like, do Stanley Cup winning teams usually work hard? Do they have demanding coaches that push them to work hard? I feel like yes. It's like, well, it's just the coaches asking us to work too hard. It's like, that's bad on you, not the coach. What are you talking about?
Bruce Cassidy's system is so difficult to run that he alienated a room that had Patrice Bergeron in it.
Yep, and then he won a Stanley Cup in Vegas.
And is flat out the best X's and O's coach I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
What's the issue of talking? Well, he asked us to work hard.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty bad.
If the Bruins had been willing to work as hard as Cassidy made them, maybe the last dance would have lasted beyond seven games.
Yeah. All right. We will take a break here. We've got an open segment coming up, so we'll dive into the inbox. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in. Dimitri's coming up at 1:30. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get your thoughts in now. And before we dive into the inbox, I got to give a shout out to our colleague Satyar Shah, who heard you in the first segment of the show use his patented catchphrase that two things can be true at once, which you purport to hate. And immediately Johnny on the spot texted us both to remind you. He's in his words, "I'm in your head, Tom."
Yeah, again though, I reject that this is...
I just like the menacing energy in how he chose to phrase it.
Me too. He is in my head. He's not wrong. I do think, though, that the fundamental truth here is that there are no good options, right? The Canucks have to be competitive this year and next because Quinn Hughes wants to win.
Yep.
Like, that's kind of it. And they're kind of out of runway. You know, they were able to be good enough that they were able to get Elias Pettersson signed. That hasn't gone great, but I still believe in the talent of that player. The options here, though, are really quite grim, right? I mean, whether it's Miller, whether it's Pettersson, those are hard deals to make, hard deals to win, especially in midstream. you know, you're already seeing, like, Gary Mason tweeted yesterday that get yes. ready for Miller to stick around. So, I mean, possible, I guess. I mean, man. Earlier this week, the widespread industry expectation was that this would be expedited.
So I just want to, on the Pettersson thing, right? Because I was, you know, ranting and raving about how I just want them to do the JT Miller trade. I don't really care about the return that much. Get it over with. Move on. Rip the Band-Aid off. And a lot of people texting in, of course, about Elias Pettersson. I'll read just a couple here. Hank the Tank says, I can't believe I'm saying this, partly because it feels like breaking a cardinal rule, and I love the player so much. But what if trading Pettersson is the right decision? It sounds crazy to me as I type it, but is there a world where Pettersson is the right move over Miller? Andy in Vancouver texts in, talk about trading Pettersson, holding on to an 11.6 for 8 years deal. That's the biggest risk facing this organization. It's eating that contract. A lot of other texts coming in, right, saying, hey, why is all the focus on Miller? Talk about trading Elias Pettersson. Here's the thing for me. I can buy trading both, and I'm even willing, like, look, I wouldn't be out there proactively shopping Elias Pettersson at this point, because as you said, the team still wants to be good next year and the year after that. That we've seen the talent. Is it grim now? Yeah, it sure is. And do I have a lot of confidence that he's going to rebound in Vancouver? No, I have very, very little confidence. But that's also probably your best bet. Well, it is your best bet to having a legit top of the lineup center in the lineup, is crossing your fingers and praying for Elias Pettersson to bounce back. I'm not saying that's a good thing. That sucks. That's a bad place to be in. It's unfortunate, but it's also probably the best bet you have. But to the people that want to trade Elias Pettersson, I have much fewer forceful arguments against it than I used to. I mean, he's been bad for 12 months now. And as I said in the first segment, I haven't heard a persuasive theory. You made the point about how he's a precision instrument. Okay, I guess I can buy that. But, like, that raises a lot of concerns for me about how reliably you can count on him to be a top of the lineup center. You know what I mean? Like, if your theory is true, that's not... then, oh, okay, well, we'll just make sure everything's perfect all the time for Elias Pettersson. It doesn't work like that. You've got to hope that he can overcome that side of his game, that element of his game. And again, I don't have a ton of confidence in that right now. The one thing I think is absolutely absurd is trading Elias Pettersson and keeping JT Miller. I think that's absurd. If you want to sell me on trying to trade them both, I guess I can go there, even though I still wouldn't, again, proactively try to trade Pettersson. But the idea that after the team was aggressively trying to move Miller to the point where they almost sat him out of a game because they thought he was going to the Rangers, there's been so much reporting, so much you've reported that they made the decision to move on from this core 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago almost now. JT Miller, we're hearing, he wants to move on. He's ready and willing to go. With all of that, that they're just going to say, yeah, no, never mind. And you're going to bring him back and expect him to be not just a top level player for this team as he gets into later into his 30s, but like the face of the franchise, one of the faces of the franchise, part of the leadership group. That just seems completely ridiculous to me. I think there's too much water under the bridge, and you have to move forward without JT Miller at this point. And if you're a fan out there saying, man, I can't stand watching Elias Pettersson anymore, I want them to trade him too, I'm not quite there yet. But I get it, and I don't know what the persuasive argument is, really, against it at this point. So, as you say, it's a brutal, brutal situation they find themselves in. We're probably talking about just less bad options, but just because we're talking about less bad options, I think people that makes people default to the passive option, right? Because then it at least feels like you're not making things worse. You know, you're like, well, hey, okay. We're not going to get a good return. There's no good options. We'll just sit on our hands. But that is still making a choice. That's making a choice. And that's sitting on your hands and doing nothing is a really bad option too. And in fact, I think it's the worst option. So yeah, the other options suck, but they're still better than doing nothing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Canucks options are all suck. And so you're trading Elias Pettersson. If you trade Elias Pettersson, I guess you're still hoping for the addition by subtraction, in which case, you know, you're getting pretty good pieces back, if you like really good pieces
probably,
back,
yep.
Frankly, if you deal Elias Pettersson. So, I mean, I guess the argument for doing one, not the other, if it's even possible to actually put the
genie back in the bottle for Miller,
the milk back in the bag. is
it doesn't feel like it. I mean, I guess anything's possible, but what? You're going to like roll him out to, you know, to like big events next year and stuff is, I don't know, it just seems ridiculous to me to have him still be a major part of the organization beyond this season. Doesn't it?
I don't know. We've been through this before.
We have. But never like this.
Not to this extent, but no. I mean, it's different by degrees, not fundamentals, right?
Yeah.
It's not fundamentally different. Like, JT Miller has been on the block for this team, come back, played great hockey. Like, that's happened multiple times over the last 3 years.
Yep.
So, I guess the argument for doing it would be this. If we're just sort of doing the hypothetical thought experiment, it would be, if you can get more for Pettersson, then you can at least see this as like, hey, let's salvage this season. That's the part of the bet that makes me queasy, is that I just haven't seen enough to warrant wanting to do that if I'm the Canucks.
I don't, like, people bring up the ramifications on this season. That's out the window to me. If as a bonus you make a move and it's addition by subtraction, or you get a piece that pops with you or something and it does give you a boost.
Yeah, it's kind of gravy.
That's great, but like, that's not the focus. You're trying to save this season? You might not make the playoffs. You got to be looking beyond just this year with whatever move you make. So this year is completely beside the point to me. I mean, whatever happens, happens for the remainder of this one, but that should not be a priority with whatever they're approaching, whether it's trading Miller or trading Elias Pettersson or trading both.
Yeah, well, and again, this all might be hypothetical given like Paul Bissonnette's reporting that JT Miller in fact requested a trade, right? Or Dhaliwal's admission on Halford and Bruff today that, you know, that's semantics realistically, which, you know, we all know that, right? Like, we all know how that sort of stuff works. It might be too late, but I guess the logic of doing Pettersson, not Miller, would be you view it as like addition by subtraction, strengthening the team for this year. And then if you still feel like you need to detonate the core more significantly, you can do so having at least seen a team that you feel like has a shot. Now, do you not feel that way? Because if you deal Miller, you're just not getting anything close to that value back.
Nope.
So you feel like you're waving a white flag on this season in a different way.
I guess.
No, I think that's how it feels, because Pettersson would actually return useful pieces.
Things that you could plug in and would genuinely help you win right now, probably.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, there's no good options. There's no right answer because there's no good options. This is not fence sitting. This is an admission of just how grim and complex this has become for a team that feels pretty lost and pretty rudderless here at the moment. It's a really tough place to be. You know, this.
What's it called in chess where your only moves are bad moves? It's like, I think it's like Zugzwang or something like that.
Okay.
It's like one of those funky chess moves where it's like you have to make a move because it's your turn, but literally anything you do will make your situation worse.
It is called Zugzwang.
Zugzwang. The Canucks are in Zugzwang,
which translates to the compulsion to move.
They got to do something. They got to do something, and yet anything they do is probably going to put them in a worse situation.
Well,
I feel pretty good about that one.
You know what? It is good. It's a very sick reference, and I'm glad to know that concept. I suppose the only thing I'd say is I do think there's something worse, and it's what we're seeing. Right?
Well, that's what I mean. Inaction is actually the worst thing.
Yeah.
And so I agree that like all of the points about how you'll get worse by trading Miller are 100% true. I just have zero faith that there's any meaningful improvement by keeping him in the long term. So I think ultimately, and I also think, man, the number of texts, we haven't really gotten into them, but I know the morning show did, and on Donnie and Dolly, and we get them. The number of texts, talking to my buddies, about people who are just checking out, who are kind of disgusted, fed up, apathetic. I was talking to a friend last night, and he's like, well, you know, at least I get a lot of time in the evenings back now. Like, that's how he's looking at the Canucks now, as a diehard, lifelong fan. It's like, oh, hey, don't really feel the need to watch their games, so I've got some spare time in the evenings. That's where a big portion of this fan base is.
What? Who's not watching Utah if you're not watching the Canucks? I can't understand
baffling,
these people.
Truly.
You didn't watch that scintillating game between the San Francisco and St. Mary's? There was some good WCC action.
But see, even
last
that's
night.
An example of getting your time back if you're not committed to the Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I went and played trivia.
There you go. But you know what I mean?
It was 5-0 when I went to play trivia with my friends.
I think another element of the need to do something is I don't think you can underestimate the brand damage. I talked about this last week, and it's only gotten worse since then. The brand damage the Canucks are suffering right now putting these types of performances out over and over and over again. It, like, that is bad for business in a real sense.
It is. But you know what's really bad for business? Having 15 really lean years to open a one-year competitive window.
Yep.
Is that where we're at? Is that what happened?
Pretty close.
It depends
when you want to start the clock ticking, but...
The narrow path, right? The narrow path. The dangers of the narrow path. Yesterday I was watching the game. Harmon was writing off of it for the Athletic. So I was watching the game. It became 5-0. I turned my PVR on, and it was my buddy's birthday, and I was like, look, this game's not close enough to warrant my attention. I'm going to go play trivia with my buddy for his birthday. And so me and my wife go up, and we're walking up to the establishment, and my wife says to me, she says, if anyone asks, we're late, which we weren't, by the way. We were like half an hour early. She's like,
slack.
She's like, if anyone asks why we're late, tell them it's because you were watching the game. And I was like, okay, wait. If anyone asks me why we're late, which we're not, you want me to just tell the truth? And I'm like, glad we went over this.
Glad we got our story straight.
I don't really have a point to this story. I just wanted to tell it.
I enjoyed it.
My real fear here now is just that the Canucks opened a one-year window in which they weren't an inner circle contender for out of 15 years of like mostly abject, fitful rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, the good news is the rebuild brought in the best defender we've ever seen in franchise history. The bad news is he got two meaningful kicks at the can in the playoffs, one in his rookie year in a bubble and one in which the Canucks probably hit their absolute ceiling, and their absolute ceiling was beating the Oilers three times in a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, and man, is no matter what happens the rest of the way, you cannot tell me their ceiling is higher than that when Leon Draisaitl is head and shoulders better than every other Canucks skater, and they don't even have McDavid in the lineup, and you look that out of your depth.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like, what's the path forward here? What's the hope that you're, the faint hope that you're holding out for if you keep this group together?
Well, it's such a bad time to rebuild now.
Well, that's the thing, and I think, like, you know us, we love to call for a rebuild.
But we don't love to do it.
It's happened once or twice.
No, I only did it because I thought it was the only path forward.
Of course, I'm not saying that. I'm just having some fun.
By the way.
But my point is,
not hearing that I was wrong very often these days.
My point is, like, you can't rebuild when you have Quinn Hughes on your team. And I don't mean, like, because you're too good to tank or anything. I mean, it's a once in 30 years thing, if that, to have a player like this on your team.
Totally.
You have to fight and scrap and claw to do everything you possibly can to try to make a Stanley Cup contender around him while you have him. I'm 100% on board with that. You do not take having a player like Quinn Hughes for granted.
And, I mean, you just missed the two Vancouver kids back to back. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, well, Kevin McKenna next year. Landon DuPont the year after.
Get those unprotected 2026 picks. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Anyway, look. I hope it doesn't come to that. And anyway, I don't think you should race to the bottom the way Chicago did anyway. I do think there's a level of competence that you need to maintain. Like, what you want is to have really bad goaltending and really bad finishing and a mostly robust defense core where you've got some structure in place so that and some NHL players so that you have more of a Macklin Celebrini rookie year than a Connor Bedard rookie year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you want to at least be able to plug a guy in and have a system and have some young guys for them to play with who are already talented, you know? So, anyway, right now there are no good options, which is why there are no good moves, which is why there's no right path forward.
Which is why they're in Zugzwang.
Which is why they're in Zugzwang, and this is why, you know, the time is now. Like, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin came in. They got the right coach. They untangled a really bad situation cap-wise. They actually have some meaningful prospects in the system now versus when they came in, although they had to struggle for two seasons to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they were able to bring in Hronek and pivot nicely on Horvat and get Pettersson signed. But the next 18 months now, where it's like you've got to make a really compelling pitch to Quinn Hughes, and you've got to untangle a different type of mess, not a cap mess, but a chemistry mess. Man, this is it. Like, this is where going out and landing the Hall of Fame level executive and letting him build his team, like, now's when it has to matter, right? Because we can look at this as many times as we want. You just hope that Canucks executives can sort of show their mettle, earn their stripes here, navigate this, which is about as tricky a situation as we've seen in this market since... Like, I think it's trickier than Luongo Schneider.
Yeah, are we going back to Messier?
I think we're going back to Bure holdout. Like, Bure holdout, I think, is... So you know, that's more than a generation. We're talking about a 27-year gap.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's where we're at. I think we're at the most complicated juncture that this franchise has been in 25, 26 years. Good luck. Good luck. And let's just hope the owner's listening to them and not Biz Nasty.
This text comes in. The management misjudged the leadership group on this team. It is bad. It's on them. I think we've certainly seen more anger and criticism directed towards the management group. One, for building the defense core and fleshing it out the way they did, which is, I think, is totally fair, even if it's not the primary issue here. But also, I think, along these lines of, hey, hold on, they're the ones that committed in large part to this leadership group, to this version of the core. I think they do deserve criticism for that, especially since it's obviously not working and they're trying to move on from it now. But as you say, I think you still want Jim Rutherford to get his shot at the pivot, figuring out where to go from here, because the teardown rebuild thing just isn't happening. The fresh start, the total fresh start, total clean slate is not happening when you have Quinn Hughes here. Now, whatever happens beyond this season, the onus is going to be on management in a really, really big way, right? Like, the stakes for them are enormous to figure out a path forward, to try to clear the bar of being decent enough next year that you still have a hope to extend Quinn Hughes. None of it's easy, and all of a sudden, the risk at them, the stakes for them are going to be much, much higher. They deserve criticism for getting to this point, absolutely, but I think also Jim Rutherford deserves a chance still to try to get out of it.
One last thing. Could you do a 94 with Pettersson in the role of Peter Nedved?
I've seen it suggested in the inbox.
People have made this... Yes. This, because one of the things that happened that year, too, was the goaltending was, like, Kirk McLean lost his job.
Yep.
And then obviously went, you know, full Tim Thomas in the playoffs. Or Jonathan Quick. I'll say that so I don't offend anybody. But yeah, I mean, could you find two mobile defenders for Elias Pettersson and go 94? No.
I don't think so.
I don't either. That team worked hard.
Yeah, that team worked hard. All right, we'll leave it there. And Dmitry Filipovich joins us in studio next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining us in studio, in his customary Friday afternoon slot, he is the host of the Hockey PDOcast on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's our guy, Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, buddy?
Fellas, we're so back.
We are so back.
The Canucks might be Jover, but we're back.
I do have a confession to make, though. I don't really know, like, what to do in this segment now, because usually we preview the upcoming opponents.
Yep.
But, like, who cares? You know what I mean? I mean, I guess we'll do that. I don't know. Maybe, Drance, you have some ideas.
Yeah.
Obviously, I haven't prepped that much, but...
Yeah, we'll talk about Utah.
Like,
we'll just do a half hour talk about Utah.
How do they match up with St. Louis? It's like, I don't care. It doesn't matter if they win or lose that game.
Okay, St. Louis, I think, is interesting. I'm very interested in a Canucks St. Louis game right now because St. Louis, I'm not a believer, but they are playing better hockey, legitimately better hockey. They've found something with Fowler Pareko. Dimitri's looking at me just like aghast because he's got even less St. Louis Blues stock than I do.
I mean, they're certainly better than they were under Drew Bannister. I did watch them last night. They were playing at home against the Vegas Golden Knights. They got their fifth shot on goal in the game with 8 minutes left in the second.
Yeah.
Which even for the Canucks, they'd be like, all right, fellas, let's get some pucks on
that. It's a little much. It's a little much.
So, yeah, that's going to be a real test of first to 20 shots wins, I think.
Oh, my God.
Love that.
Here's an interesting place for us to start.
Also going to be tomorrow, by the way. The Caps also don't shoot at all.
They
anymore.
Will. They put it on the Kraken last night. But yeah, generally, they're a very efficient, low-volume team. Are you surprised that your colleague, Don Lucician, still values the Canucks as highly as he does in terms of his playoff probability?
I'm not for the following two reasons. I know well how his model works, and there's a lot of credit that the model is still ascribing to Canucks players for their production in previous seasons, especially still lots of weights from last season involved. So Dom's model is giving the Canucks, and I've said this all year, Dom's model is still giving the Canucks a lot of credit for things that I think were ephemeral and the result of inflated percentages. So that's part of it. I think the value weights that his model is assigning to Canucks talent have overrated them all season. The second part of this is
Dom notoriously has overrated Canucks players in the past.
Classic Dom.
Well, he was too low on Hughes when it mattered and too high on the Canucks going into this season, which is okay. Like, the model's still a very useful guide. I mean, put it this way. The way the model weights the teams below the Canucks in terms of their probability goes Utah, Calgary, St. Louis, right? And it's like, yeah, that's useful to me. I think there's useful intel there. I just think the model overweights Vancouver's odds.
The market has big time corrected, though. I checked it this morning.
Yes, plus 105.
Yeah, they're plus money now. All three of those teams are plus money.
Yeah. Well, 180 for the Calgary Flames and 250 for Utah.
Which I think is still great value for Utah, by the way.
I already told, in our first segment, I told our listeners.
Can you tell that Tom and I talk all the time?
Yeah, I told our listeners, if you like free money, that Utah long shot.
Somebody texted in, by the way, my New Year's resolution is to find someone who loves me as much as Durant loves Utah.
Yeah, he really does.
We should all be so lucky.
They're so fun.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, too, like, one thing that happens to me when the Canucks become really dreadful to watch is that I start watching teams that I like watching to remind myself that I like the game. Because I don't love covering this team right now. I haven't all season, frankly. But especially right now, and you need to, like, I find it's useful to have that gut check of like, oh right, you know, not all teams show up flat, not all teams have vibes like this, you know. It's useful to me,
because beat writers get tunnel vision for like the way the team 100%. They cover every day does it, and then they lose touch of like what's going on around the league. And I mean, you watch last night, Utah goes into Minnesota. Minnesota gets Kaprizov and Spurgeon back.
Yeah.
And like right away, they just smack them around. Like, it could have been 3-0 within 10 minutes. They win 4-0.
Yeah, they had the disallowed goal.
And they just have a gear that the Canucks, I don't think, have offensively, but certainly haven't reached in a while.
They haven't. I think they have a gear that the Canucks have not hit all season, even in that first 16 game stretch where Vancouver looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that I'm sitting here, and I've been saying it for a couple weeks, but I watch both teams play a lot, and I would be shocked if Vancouver at full health is a better team talent wise than Utah. Like, I just don't think there's any case to be made that that's true.
Washington,
aside from Quinn Hughes.
I mean, I'll let you guys go on Utah as long as you want.
Okay,
I don't really care.
Calgary is up 3 points the game in hand, and they're the team holding on to the wild card.
Yeah.
And no one cares.
About Calgary.
Well, in terms of like the fact that they're actually the team that's in the playoffs right now. It feels like even the betting market is not putting a lot of stock in it. And I get it from
disrespect is real for Calgary.
I get it from a preseason expectations perspective and from a talent perspective. They're really good at home, and Dustin Wolf is phenomenal. And so the longer they hang around, I feel like it's becoming much more increasingly likely, I think, that they're not going to fade in terms of like bottoming out.
The one thing is, like,
the floor is so high.
Too. The wolf factor matters.
I never bought them as like first overall pick contenders because I thought they were going to be dismal. Okay, Huberto, disappointment. He's still not the type of player who's normally on the worst team. You know what I mean? Kadri, same thing. Blake Coleman, Backlund, same thing. Uyghur, Asmer. Like, there's just enough guys who it's like, even if you don't buy it as a playoff team, those players typically don't make up the bulk of a bottom three record team. You know what I mean? And then you add in the goaltending. So I'm not necessarily buying on them to make the playoffs, but like their floor might be a lot closer to like a 450 points percentage than a 350 points percentage. You know what I mean? And if that's the case, well, all you need is some good goaltending and some breaks, and they easily could make the playoffs.
Well, and they definitely have good goaltending, and they definitely have none of the question marks where it's like, what sort of effort will we get from them
tonight? They're a max effort every night. And you see that. I think that's why their home record is really good. I know often we don't put too much stock into those home road splits, but like theirs are dramatic this year. And then you watch last night against Buffalo, and like the crowd loves the team. And so it makes sense that a max effort team would benefit from a home ice advantage. And so I think they have a bunch of home games coming up here as well. So
it's fun to root for a max effort team. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing.
Especially like exceeding expectations. Yeah. Which is kind of what the Canucks were last year. Yeah, at least the first three quarters of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And I think a lot of fans, obviously, not just the winning helped, of course, but there was also the effort evident in a completely different way. It's evident this year, but in a much more negative sense.
It's evident in absence.
Now, I think if you were going to try to hand out the moniker this year's Canucks, would it be the Washington Capitals?
Yeah.
And I don't say that disparagingly. Well, that's what I think. It sounds like a pure insult, but it's not, because the Canucks did a lot of things well last year, just like Washington is doing a lot of things well this year.
They won a lot of games and made it to game seven of the second round. That's a successful season.
Yeah.
I think this Capitals team is interesting because early on I was pushing back against that because I thought that while they were obviously just scoring on every shot they took and scoring a ton of goals, they were generating a lot. That's come down over the past like 20 games or so. They're not generating as much. They're still scoring a lot because their shooting percentage is through the roof. Mm-hmm. I still think there's quite a bit of talent on this team, and I think something they have going for them that the Canucks did last year as well is that they're very deep. And so there's not a lot of drop-off. Now, come the postseason against a star-studded lineup, that's less of an advantage.
Yeah.
But in the regular season, like, they're very difficult to match up against, especially in a condensed schedule, because there's just going to be no off-shifts. They're going to get contributions from various different sources. And so it's a really tricky team, especially one that's getting the type of goaltending they are.
Alexi
Protas hit 20 goals last night. He rocks. You know, they're just guys all throughout the lineup that are contributing. They have some interesting decisions as well, right? Because they've been linked to guys like Brock Nelson and other interesting rentals on the market. Similar, I mean, I know the Canucks last year made the Zadorov trade, obviously that helped, and then the Lindholm trade closer to the deadline. When a team has the type of vibes that this Capitals team does, I almost don't
want to... You don't want to see them make a move?
I don't really want to see them mess with it. Now, as we've spoken about, they probably have the best pro scouting staff in the entire league. So if they identify a guy that they like, I'll believe that he'll probably look good for them. So I won't knock it, but I feel like right now I would be hesitant to mix with what they are going. Because
they're pro scouting heater.
I mean, everyone they bring in,
everyone who goes there,
immediately reclamation project, better than they've ever been. It's crazy.
Well, they also have hit on, between Chychrun, Dubois, and Thompson, three guys who had like intangible question marks this season. Which I honestly am a little bit surprised that Washington has not been linked in any way to JT Miller. They feel like a perfect team to go after him.
Maybe they're
the vibes are too good. I feel like that's just I'd be surprised.
Yeah, and I see, it just makes so much sense to me on paper. Like, you'd be such a hard team to handle if you were able to add him to a group with like Tom Wilson and Protas, and like you'd just have all these pretty singular skill guys with size.
I mean, so I was watching really closely. They played in Edmonton a couple nights ago, and they wound up winning a close game. And at the end, their checking line was Dubois, Tom Wilson, and Alexi Protas. And there was just no space on the entire ice surface to move at all. Like, it was just three guys with outrageous wingspan.
Three enormous dudes.
And it was just like, good luck. And they're awesome. And they're all skating hard. And they're chipping in offensively. And so, I mean, what a luxury. But Spencer Carberry's also done.
Oh, amazing.
Like, speaking of pro scouting, the scouting of identifying him as an assistant coach to bring in and take over is probably the biggest win they've had.
Well, and how, I mean, how big a difference would he make for so many of the teams that have hired coaches? I mean, the Rangers, I know, have righted the ship, but like, that's one of them that stands out to me, especially given, you know, that they could have gone in a younger team direction and kind of decided against it. Dim, when you're watching the Canucks right now, I mean, what are you seeing? Just lay it out. Like, you're a guy who watches a ton of the league more closely than anybody. I mean, do you have any hope that this team can turn it around?
I mean, it's tough. Like, relatively speaking, from some of the performances we've seen recently, whether it's last night at Edmonton or the home game against the Kings, the road games in Winnipeg and, mm-hmm. and Carolina specifically, those are such poor performances that I don't think that's reflective. Like, whatever, however you think the roster and personnel is flawed, whatever drama's going on, like, it's just not reflective yep. of an NHL team to be playing that way. So I don't expect anyone to be that bad. So in terms of bouncing back from that, I'd be like, all right, yeah, I would believe that they would play better. They've had these games that inspire confidence that we talked about defensively against the Avs and the Panthers, which seems like a long time ago now, but even the game in Toronto, mm-hmm. the home game against Edmonton when they kept them to 15 shots or whatever. Like, they have those, but they're becoming so increasingly rare that I feel like the mark of a good team is being able to string together good games yep. and also find ways resourcefully to win when you don't have your A game. And that team, this team does not have that right now.
And if you're going to win in the regular season by virtue of your lockdown defensive effort and you don't have a ton of margin for error because you're not a good offensive team, you have to bring that effort every night or yep. 99% of the time, right? Or else you're just going to be bad. You know what I mean? If it's like, if your path to winning is incredible defensive buy-in and it shows up once every five games, that's just an awful team. That's a bad team. And I agree, they're not going to be as bad as they've looked over the last month or so forever. But the question is, even if they like regress to their roughly true talent level with the lack of offensive juice they have, it feels more like they're going to be regressing to going like 5-4-1 in 10 games rather than doing anything really impressive or indicative of being a contender.
Yeah, I agree with that. At the same time, and that's why we brought up the betting market and the way they're sort of projecting this, the competition is still uneven enough that like the opening is there to be mm-hmm. that second wild card, right? Like, Utah's had been one of the worst teams this year in terms of like one score games, like close games. They just keep losing those, which a young team's probably going to do. Calgary, their offense, you're talking about the Canucks being bad offense, so I think Calgary's down at 29th or 30th
yep.
in goals per hour this season, so it's not like they have that much to fall back on there. So in terms of who they're competing against and who they have to beat out, like, the bar is still low enough to clear that a bunch of 5-4-1 stretches might be enough. Now, what that gets you ultimately.
Well, that's the thing. Also, like, it's like we're back to this talking about the playoffs. Making the playoffs is this grand achievement. Yes. It's like, well, ultimately, who cares? Okay, if you sneak in and get.
Especially since like, it's seeming like it probably would be Edmonton
yes.
in round one as the second wild card. Like, it seems like they're headed towards winning the West.
Yeah.
So.
That's a tough matchup, as we saw.
Yeah.
JT Miller.
Yes. Thoughts.
Which team, yeah, go. Which team, is there a spot that you think, you know what, if I was that team, I would do it. I would roll the dice. I think he fits us well enough to be worth the risk, the downside, all of that. From a hockey perspective, he's enough of a fit. Does anything stand out to you?
Probably, I would say the Dallas Stars from the perspective of Jamie Benn's contract's coming off the books this summer. Tyler Seguin probably will be back this postseason, but I would not be surprised at all to see him retire this summer or be put on LTIR moving forward. They obviously are comfortable bringing in veterans at this stage of their career, as we've seen time and time again, mm-hmm. and like extending their shelf life and getting a couple more good years out of them. I think Tom was on we do our Sunday special on the PDO cast, mm-hmm. and I think Tom brought up a really good point of, like, for JT Miller to get max utility out of him, I think probably at this point you need him to be playing with other good players on the wing, and Dallas has a lot of center depth, or at least center versatility with their personnel, and also to be a guy you can kind of funnel the puck through on the power play.
Yeah.
And Dallas's power play struggled this year, and they don't really have someone who's like, quote-unquote, the guy that operates and controls everything. Yep. So JT Miller on that flank working downhill and setting other guys up is actually an interesting addition to that top unit power play to go along with playing on whatever top six wing he would play on. So from a contract and from an on-ice fit perspective, and from like, that's a pretty no-nonsense team that has a lot of veteran players already and is obviously in a very competitive window right now, I feel like if anyone could get the most out of his game, it probably is them. So I'd say the Stars. But also, Jim Nill typically doesn't make massive moves in terms of like sacrificing a bunch of future capital. I certainly don't think, like, I think the best young player you could probably hope for would be Maverick Bourque coming from them. I think that'd be like a best case scenario. Mm-hmm. I don't see any of the other young options being available or being willing to be parted with. So I don't know. I don't know what that trade would look like, but purely from a fit perspective.
The Dallas MO is to wait until he gets bought out. That side of him.
Then they'll, yeah. Then they'll be all over it.
Be all in on him after that point or from that point on.
One team that was sort of linked as a dark horse by Frank Saravalli last night on the Prime broadcast to JT Miller was the Boston Bruins. Mm. What do you think of that fit? I know, like, for example, the Canucks have been fans in the past of Pavel Zacha. So as the stand-in for Hedl in that sort of package, what would you think there?
I mean, I like it from the Bruins' perspective of, like, they're so committed. Like, they're so far down the road right now with this core.
Untangling it is.
They obviously need any help they can. I think, like, the stat is the past 11 games they played, they have 34 goals. Pasternak has a point on 20 of them. Like, every single thing they do offensively funnels through him. So, like, just getting some sort of secondary playmaker and goal scorer and option would be so huge for them. I've never really been a fan of Pavel Zacha's game. So, like, from a Canucks perspective, I don't think that's that intriguing.
Relative
personally.
Merits of Zacha, Kotkaniemi, and
Philip
Hedl.
Oh, wow. Things just got dark.
I mean, Hedl's clearly the most talented with the highest upside out of those three.
Yep.
Has a lot of injury risk because he's one hit to the head away from not playing anymore, I think, which I guess is true for
most
players. Yeah. But he has, I think, higher inherent risk. Yeah. But he would be the most interesting player that I think they could get.
A theory for you. The Zacha Kotkaniemi thing, I think, is sneaky interesting from a Canucks perspective, because while those guys as second line centers doesn't exactly get me excited, the idea of putting a big bodied lefty center who is willing to mix it up and just stand in dirty areas of the ice with Connor Garland, who I think can drive a middle six line pretty reliably and help set up those types of players, as we saw with Dakota Joshua, I think at least gives you a direct path to, like, having a second line that's not as hooped as you'd expect, provided you get, you know, a pretty competent middle six guy, especially if they're a big lefty like those two guys are. You buying or selling this theory?
I mean, I can see it. I don't want to take too firm of a stance on this because we've seen Pavel Zacha in the past go on these PDO heaters.
Yeah.
Where, like, he just produces a bunch and everything.
A PDO heater?
Everything's going in, and then all of a sudden.
Sounds like a Vancouver Canuck.
Perfect fit.
And then people are taking victory laps over it, so I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah.
Where, like, he gets traded and just has 15 points in the first 10 games, and everyone's like, what an addition. And then, like, you're watching, and you're like, he hasn't really done anything.
That's especially the Vancouver market where people will be, like, angrily tweeting at me, like, you told me Anthony Beauvillier was a cap dump. And it's like, give it a month, man.
Do we want to do a quick lighthearted draft here? Anyone got any ideas for a lighthearted draft?
Do you want to draft most disappointing Canucks performances?
No,
of the
that's
season?
Not lighthearted. I think a non-hockey draft.
We need something like nice to send us into the weekend.
Yeah. What about, like, have we ever done a cookie draft? Is it time?
You want to draft cookies?
Yeah, we could do cookies.
I love cookies. I'm down.
I've always got cookies on the mind.
Yeah, me too.
Always.
Cookies and pizza are my two favorite types of food.
Oh, man, I love pizza so much.
And cookies?
I like cookies, too. They're not in the pizza tier. Pizza's in a tier all on its own. All right, who wants to go first? Dim, you're going first.
Okay, I got to think about the strategic. You know what? I'll just give me a classic chocolate chip.
Yeah,
that's,
come on.
That's
got
to go 101. Yeah.
Don't
it's a generational cookie. Yeah.
Think it.
I know.
Don't overthink it.
You want to go second or you want the snake?
I'll have the snake.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys have had these yet, but I'm drafting a s'mores cookie. Have you had a s'mores cookie yet?
No.
They're often, so it's obviously a chocolate chip cookie with marshmallow in it, but it also usually has the graham cracker at the bottom of the cookie. Like, it's literally integrated into the cookie. Unbelievable stuff. Okay. S'mores cookie.
S'mores cookie.
My current obsession.
All right. I'm going to go, you know how you get, it's like a chocolate chip cookie, but it has M&Ms in it instead.
Okay.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course I do. A candy cookie. Yeah,
yeah, candy cookie. What do you, why did you, why were you so shook then? You're like, okay.
Well, because how you introduced it.
You framed it as a foreign concept.
Yeah, you were like,
I don't know what the word is.
Have you ever heard of
it?
This crazy thing that every place that sells cookies ever has?
I don't know
where
what the word
instead
for
of chocolate
it is.
Chips, they have M&Ms and or Smarties.
Anyways, I'll take a candy cookie.
Yeah.
All right. And then
totally valid third pick.
I'll go with a double stuff Oreo as my second pick.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I got candy cookie and double stuff Oreo.
I like it.
Thank you.
I'm going to go with, oh man, there's so many good options.
So many good options.
I know. I'm going to go with a white chocolate macadamia.
Oh!
So good, right?
It's a good one.
See, that's my personal favorite. That's why I had the dilemma of picking it first, because I wanted to like represent myself.
I could see Tim wasn't happy when I made him go first.
No, I know, because I knew it wouldn't be good value. Like, I knew I had to take chocolate chip from a drafting perspective, but man, I wish I had a white chocolate macadamia.
So good.
Want to trade?
Yeah.
That's back to you,
Tim. I'll make both your picks.
Why didn't you take it first if you wanted it so bad?
Because then you wouldn't have chocolate chip.
Oh, God, I'm devastated. I don't even know what's left. this is such a lame pick. Give me an oatmeal raisin.
That is pretty bad.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I had an oatmeal cookie today, and it was great.
Yeah.
All right, you got to do, well, you do one more.
I thought you said this
was
going to be uplifting, and now I'm going into the weekend more sad than I was talking about the Canucks.
I gave you the first overall pick and everything. You'll just have to make do with your chocolate chips. So we're wrapping it up at two apiece.
Yeah, I think that's
all right.
Fair.
What?
You have more?
Yeah, so many more.
You got some undrafted free agents.
I thought we were going like 20.
You want to bring in?
Yeah, 100%. I'm gonna dump all fab on Milano's.
You got some PTOs you want to bring? You want to bring in a training camp?
Do you guys like Chips Ahoy? Some people hate them. I like them.
I'm okay with them.
Any cookie will do, really.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. What am I going to do? Turn my nose up at a cookie?
Shortbread? I like shortbread.
I like shortbread. I like Christmas cookies.
I really like
a lot of
ginger
talent.
Snaps.
A lot of talent. Ooh.
I'm
on the board.
Big ginger snaps guy.
Oh, remember when Lena brought the ginger snaps in?
Who could forget? Oh. Those were unbelievable.
That was one of the best days in the office.
I was shocked at how excited you guys were.
That was a mistake. You should not have been shocked at that. That was your fault. Of course we were going to be excited.
I also, you know, stuffed cookies. If you like had these like cookies that have like candy... this like places like YVR cookies, free plug.
Okay.
But they're like stuffed with various types of candy or like even cookie dough or peanut butter cups.
A cookie with cookie dough in it? Oh my gosh.
Unreal. I know. It's
what about Fudgios?
I love Fudgios. That was on my list.
I'm a big Fudgios guy too.
All right.
Cookies. They're delightful.
We talked about cookies.
You know what I
like
about cookies?
Oh, hold on.
They always give a consistent effort.
That's right. All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for texting as well. We're back on Monday for more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.